I am Plant Online. This is the commentary.ca. Paul Wilcox joins me now from Victoria. He is a syndicated columnist. I read him online at the Victoria Times Columnist website as well as at his blog, wilcox.blogspot.com. He was the recipient of the 2003 Commentator of the Year Award from the Jack Webster Foundation, and in 2000 he was a finalist for the National Magazine Award. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Paul Wilcox. Good morning, Mr. Wilcox.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Excellent. Thank you.
What happened to your column in The Sun?
Well, The Sun and the Times Columnist, being owned by the same company, don't run columns from each other's newspaper. So once I started appearing regularly in the Times Columnist, I had to give up The Sun, sadly.
And how often are you in the Times?
Generally once or twice a week. I also write editorials.
I'm interested about editorials, because I'm sure people in our audience are as well. The Sun came out this morning and endorsed Stephen Harper. Now, how does that happen? Obviously, one person doesn't write that, or do they?
Well, one person probably does the writing, but no, they would have sat down. I mean, they've had the opportunity over the course of the campaign to follow it fairly closely, and they've likely had sort of party representatives in making their pitch over the last 12 months. So it's a decision made by the editorial board at the newspaper, which would include the editorial page editor and the editorial writers, generally or often the editor-in-chief and sometimes the publisher as well. And so in the case of The Sun, that's probably six or seven people who, based on my experience, take something like that as a serious challenge, sit down, spend a lot of time thinking about whether there's, whether they really want to endorse anyone at all, and then if they do, who, and making the case for it. So it's a pretty significant and thoughtful process for most newspapers.
You wrote something interesting on I guess in a column of yours, I read it on your blog, about this campaign, this federal election campaign in particular, and the media's performance in it, that it, at the time, it was less than exemplary. Are you guys, to borrow the title of your blog, paying attention?
I think we're probably paying attention to the wrong things, and to some extent, you have to cut the media a little slack, because I think we're reflecting the public's attitude toward this election, which until very, very recently was to treat it as something that they just wish had not happened in the first place. But no, I don't think it's. I think it's been one of the less successful elections in terms of the media performance in bringing out real issues. We haven't really thought through as TV and radio and print reporters, at least in my view, a better way of dealing with the kind of campaigns that people are running today. So the parties all have their war rooms set up, as they call them, which is, when you think about it in itself, is really, really offensive that they would liken their effort in competing against another party to war. I mean, that implies a certain amount of fierceness and destruction that shouldn't be there, and that's reflected in the way the war rooms operate, so that reporters, especially those covering the campaign full-time, are just literally getting emails on their BlackBerries every 15 minutes from one party saying something, and then another party responding, and then the first party responding again, and it's they get so caught up, I think, in this minutia that they tend to lose sight of the fact that they're writing about things that really don't matter to Canadians a lot of time, and really aren't shedding as much light on the issues as they should be. Very, very good column in the Ottawa Citizen by John Robson in Friday's paper, and that talked about his discouragement about the kind of really negative, mean-spirited stuff he's been getting as a reporter involved in the campaign, and urging just to return to some sort of decency.
Is this the sort of trend, though, that we're seeing throughout, not only in this country, but in this province, this continent?
Yeah, oh yeah, very, very much. It's a trend, and you know, the parties have made their decision that they think this is effective, but now it's up to the media and the public to start really thinking about, well, how do we respond to this? Is this what we want from our politicians? How do we, why as a media, for example, do we let them determine that this is going to be the tone of the campaign, and that this is going to be the things that we're focusing on, the strategy and what people are wearing and who has the best commercials, not to the exclusion of focus on policy, because there has been some really good work done. And if you take the time, if you do the digging and go to, you know, the CanWest website or the CBC website, or even papers on sort of a fairly regular basis, you get a sense of the issues. But I think they are submerged often in this mess of irrelevancy.
Don't you think this is indicative of the media in general, or the sort of culture that we're in, that people aren't paying attention to politics? So the political people and the media have to sort of focus on these things, on these sort of frivolous issues, to get people to read their papers, to watch their newscasts?
I don't think so. I mean, I've always had the view that if we can find a way to present it in a way that makes it clear how what we're talking about relates to the person's life. So, you know, it doesn't help much if we say that, if we just sort of report that Stephen Harper is offering $100 a month and that's his child care policy, and Stéphane Dion proposes to spend $300 million a year to create more daycare spaces and that's his child care policy, unless we go further and say, what $300 million likely equates to, and, you know, it's $30 million for British Columbia a year, how many spaces do you create, what would they cost, where would they be, and unless you look sort of ostensibly at Stephen Harper's plan and say, well, that, you know, he's tried that, it didn't actually add any spaces, it's been, from a public policy point of view, a total failure. So I think we can do better, and I mean, the only reason I assume that you do this kind of work and that I do this kind of work is that you believe that people are interested in policy, they are interested in the issues, and you just have to find a way to present the information to them in a way that matters.
Is that your experience, so that people are paying attention, like regular people are paying attention to this election campaign?
No, they're not paying attention to this election campaign, and I think we haven't done a good enough job, and B, the increasing cynicism and distrust of politicians is really creating an incentive for people to just tune out altogether. They just sort of a pox on all their houses for the negative way they approach things, for the fact that people believe they can't be trusted. I mean, it certainly doesn't help when Stephen Harper promises fixed election dates and then, out of convenience, changes his policy completely. It makes it hard for voters to go, yes, this is a person that I really, really, it's worth my time to pay attention to his statements because he's going to follow through with them.
I understand you were in the United States recently.
Yes.
And what's your view of how they're paying attention to their politics? We seem obsessed with it up here. They must be consumed with it down there.
They are consumed. I was in New York City, which to some extent you sort of, they have that feeling, as do when I've traveled on the west coast of America too, that sense that they're sort of being excluded from their politics, or they have been for the last 8 years. They sort of voted to the opposite, in the opposite direction of much of the country. But yeah, I was completely struck by the passion they feel for this election and by the sense, there's a real sense, I think, especially by people, by Democrats, by people on the moderate left of, by the standards of U.S. politics, that this is a pivotal election, that if this sort of America continues on the course that it's been on for the last 8 years, which those people believe John McCain would take it, then it faces a sort of bleak and deteriorating future. So there's a real, they've certainly embraced this election far more hugely than Canadians have embraced our election, I guess because in many ways the choice is more dramatic and more starker. I guess the other thing in Canada is not to be cynical or to downplay the legitimate differences between the parties, but there's not a huge gulf between the positions of the Liberals and the positions of the Conservatives on an awful lot of the major challenges confronting the country right now. You know, there's degrees of difference, but they all voted to continue the war in Afghanistan in the near term. They all have fairly similar tax policies, or at least not dramatically different enough that people are going to feel a sense of deep anguish as a result of the election, one way or the other.
As a follower of politics, this must be a fun time for you, as it is for me. We've got a federal election. We've got, in Vancouver at least, we've got two provincial by-elections coming up. We've got a municipal election that's been going on forever, and then the American race.
Yeah, it's a fascinating time, and it's, you know, it's fascinating the way there's sort of the spillover tactically, and as they all learn lessons from each other. You know, I know that both here in British Columbia and federally, they've been paying a huge amount of attention to the American race, just in terms of what they can learn about how they get things done here. It's a bit of a challenge for the BC Liberals heading into a provincial election so quickly after a federal election, because, you know, one of Gordon Campbell's great, great successes as a leader has been his ability to bring together people on the center-right side of the spectrum and keep them all pointed in the same direction. And for any federal campaign, the provincial Liberal coalition of conservatives and federal Liberals tend to bang heads fairly aggressively, especially in some of these close-fought ridings, and especially when it's a somewhat negative campaign. So now he's going to have about 6 months to sort of get everybody back pointing in the same direction provincially again. And it's always one of the things he's been able to do very, very well.
In terms of these two the by-elections here in Vancouver, is there any idea of how they'll go yet?
No, I don't think there is. At least it's not in my mind, because I don't think people, voters, and even campaigners to some extent have really turned their minds to those elections yet. And it's reasonable to expect in any by-election that it's an uphill challenge for the party in power, because it's just such an easy, painless way to cast the protest vote, and the opposition party can really focus its resources on getting the vote out. So, you know, any reasonable showing by the Liberals would probably be considered a good thing for them at this point. But I think the focus will shift quite abruptly to that once we're through the federal campaign.
And I guess in May of 2009, we've got another provincial election coming up. Is it still a slam dunk for Gordon Campbell, or is it something that we won't know for a long time still?
No, I think it's not. I mean, I would have said even 4 or 5 months ago that it was a slam dunk for Gordon Campbell, because I think people are generally, especially people in the Lower Mainland, are happy with the government that the Liberals have delivered, despite some of the stumbles. But leaving aside the specific policy problems, like the carbon tax, which, to my surprise, I guess, how the public seems quite strongly opposed to. I thought it was a reasonable tax, you know, brought in without perhaps without adequate thought or adequate consultation, but the principle makes perfect sense, and the initial implementation is really not that painful or onerous, but the public sure didn't see it that way, and that sort of seemed to start something rolling, and there's been increasing evidence that people have this sense that Gordon Campbell personally, and you know, really it is in many ways a one-man government, just isn't paying attention to them and to their concerns, and is sort of aloof and indifferent to them. And it's been coming out strongly enough in the polls, and the government's been doing a really poor job of responding to it. I mean, when you have things like the latest lobbyist scandal, in which the campaign manager for the last two provincial Liberal campaigns simply refuses to cooperate with an investigation into whether he violated the Lobbyist Act and review, and effectively shows the whole thing as a sham, and the premier just sort of shrugs his shoulders, it sort of adds to the problems he's got. So I think a lot can happen in the next 6 months. A lot can happen, both good and bad, for the Liberals. And as always, when you do you look at these kinds of things, it's pretty easy for people to say at this point that they might vote NDP. And then once the election gets closer, they start looking harder at the NDP and its policies, and sometimes that changes fairly dramatically. But the Liberals have taken what looked like quite a sure bet for re-election, probably with a very similar numbers to they've got now, and created an opening for Carol James and the NDP to put together a campaign that could challenge them.
On the Kinsella story, Sean Holman, does he get credit for uncovering that?
He gets the entire credit for uncovering that. He's done some excellent work, too, on the Ministry of Children's Families issues with the child and youth representative. So he's had quite a good couple of months, actually. But yeah, Sean's been very dogged on looking into these lobbying activities. Over about at least a year, I think, he's been working on portions of this story, and he deserves great credit for bringing this one to light, because it's significant. We're talking about just the total failure of the lobbyist registration system that the Liberals set up. Now, again, you have to give them credit. The NDP did nothing to regulate lobbying during its years in power. So, you know, the Liberals took the first step, but they've been very slow to turn it into something that actually works. And we're also, talking about the activities of one of the most powerful insiders in the province, Patrick Kinsella, and his company in this have lobbied or have provided consulting help, I guess, in dealing with government for Alcan, and that got them such an incredibly lucrative and generous power deal signed by the government for their Alcan's, the power from their Alcan smelter, that the BC Utilities Commission actually stepped in and overturned it and said it was unfair to Hydro's ratepayers. Worked with Accenture, the company that was able to capture the outsourcing contract worth about $1.5 billion, BC Hydro, very controversial. The payday loan industry got about $65 million in tax breaks for the movie industry. And, you know, none of this is illegal or anything. This is, you know, lobbying is part of, or government relations consulting is part of what we do. And there's a legitimate role for people to say, who give you help on trying to influence government and persuade government that what you want would also be good for the province and good for them. But when these kinds of questions are raised about them, and when there's sort of an obvious gap in the legislation that's supposed to be providing accountability, which the Liberals said was very important, then it is a very, very large story.
Back to the federal campaign, just to close off here for a sec. In British Columbia, what should we be looking for on Tuesday night?
I think there's about six or seven races here that are going to be, that are still, as far as I can tell, up in the air, in part because of the vote splitting that we've got out here, where the Conservatives and NDP and Liberals are all strong in some ridings. The Greens are a significant factor. So probably the biggest thing to look for, and that means that we're going to matter. It's going to be a very close election. If we have seven seats that could change or are still in play, it could be very, very significant when the votes start getting counted out here. I think the things to watch for will be how much ultimately, voter turnout for one thing, how much, if people are actually interested enough to participate in this, and then how much strategic voting is going to drive the outcome in this election. There seems to be a big, big sense that when you have these kinds of races, when you have a race, we have a couple of races here on Vancouver Island where, you know, people know that the Green or New Democrat candidate, for example, isn't likely to be successful, and they're going to make that decision, well, would I rather have Harper in power, or would I rather have a Liberal MP reducing Harper's majority? So, you know, I think what happens to the Green vote, how much it erodes, how strong the NDP vote stays, and how much people decide to vote strategically will be the fascinating things to watch for.
In terms of seat totals, though, will it remain the same sort of Conservatives leading?
Oh, yeah, the Conservatives certainly will dominate the province. They should be, you know, somewhere 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 seats, the Liberals, you know, in the single digits. And it'll be interesting, I guess, to see whether the Liberals come out ahead of the NDP or whether the NDP holds more seats. But it's still going to be very strongly Conservative. But even a swing of two or three or four seats either way could mean the difference between, I think, what looks like certainly a Harper minority government at this point, but how strong a minority and how compromising he will have to be to on his agenda will be determined to some extent here in BC.
Paul, these are fascinating and interesting times. Thanks so much for coming on today.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. The column, Victoria Times columnist, I read that online. And, of course, the blog, wilcox.blogspot.com. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Hanna.